You're listening to WGXC,
ACRA,
Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM. We're here for you.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRA, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show on Wednesday, December 1st. And on the first of the month, every month, Rob Gellis brings us the month in history. He does so again this month with December facts. And we have another almanac-like story as meteorologist Hugh Johnson joins the show to talk about how late the first snow this year came. We've only had a little bit of snow. I guess there were 3 inches in the Taconics last weekend, and there's a sprinkling of confectionery sugar on the Catskills right now, but no real snowfall has fell in much of the Hudson Valley so far this winter season, as it's meteorological winter as of December 1st. So we'll hear about that, and we'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
Mid-Hudson Valley Democratic Socialists are hosting a Meet the Labor Movement in the Hudson Valley Zoom event on Tuesday, December 7th, with local union representatives including Beth Wilson, Brian Nelson, Sarah Dowd, Ashwini Sukanthankar, and others. There's RSVP online. It's one of the many events in the community calendar at WGXC.org. You can find out more information there about the Meet the Labor Movement event, Tuesday, December 7th, online from the Mid-Hudson Valley Democratic Socialists.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that 4 local hospitals are at 10% capacity or less as of November 26th. That was the day Governor Kathy Hochul signed an executive order allowing state health officials to limit non-essential procedures for in-hospitals or systems with limited capacity. Hochul signed the order because a winter wave of new COVID-19 cases has hit the state, and more are expected with the arrival of the new Omicron variant. The Albany Medical Center Hospital, the Samaritan Hospital in Rensselaer County, the Saratoga Hospital, and the Delaware Valley Hospital in Delaware County now all have only 10% of beds available. Hochul said November 29th she hoped the hospital's lacking space for new patients would increase bed capacity and fall off the list. Hochul's order goes into effect December 3rd, and any hospital with 10% or less capacity then will be required to shut down most elective surgeries until January 15th, 2022. Hochul's executive order also allows the state to use National Guard units to add staff in New York hospitals. Quote, we have surveyed our National Guard resources. We know that there are numbers who have EMT training or healthcare backgrounds, and we can deploy them in a targeted way to the healthcare facilities, the nursing homes and long-term healthcare facilities, where they're having a shortage because here's how it works. One of the reasons we have additional individuals still in the hospital who are non-COVID, who are ready to be discharged, is that the nursing homes don't have enough staff to take them, unquote, Hochul said. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Brendan J. Lyons and Kenneth C. Crow II report in the Times Union that Rensselaer County Executive Steve McLaughlin, and I quote, is expected to face criminal charges, end quote, in a state attorney general's investigation into campaign issues from when he was a member of the state assembly. The FBI is also a part of the investigation about the use of campaign funds that began in 2019 and was slowed by the COVID-19 pandemic. The Times Union reported in January 2020 that the investigation concerned whether McLaughlin, and I quote, had given bonuses or pay increases to former staffers in the state assembly in exchange for them returning some of the funds to him or using the money to donate to his campaign account, end quote. Anonymous sources now tell the paper they expect court activity in the coming days. Neither McLaughlin nor Richard W. Crist, the Rensselaer County Operations Director, responded to requests for comment, and their attorneys could not be reached for comment. Crist was placed on leave from his $105,000 a year county job in March 2019 after the Times Union reported that he was a focus of the criminal investigation. And you can read more about this story in the Times Union.
Natasha Vaughn Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that officials at Columbia Memorial Health November 30th announced the temporary suspension of some visitation due to concerns over resurgent COVID cases and the uncertainty of the Omicron variant. CMH is one of several area hospitals limiting visitors from inpatient units because of the recent increase in local COVID cases. Quote, when we started to see the numbers ramp up, we took that as a precaution to protect our patients, the staff, and community at large from transmission of the virus, unquote, Columbia Memorial spokesperson Bill Van Slyke said. There are some exceptions to the new visitation policy, such as visits for patients near the end of life, parents or guardians of hospitalized children, patients requiring a support person, and special circumstances at the discretion of staff, such as discharge planning and family meetings. Van Slyke said the hospital will take each request under advisement on a case-by-case basis and ensure all possible protective measures are in place. According to the CMH website, the visitor policy remains unchanged in the emergency department, surgical services, and behavioral health. Albany Medical Center began a new visitation policy November 29th, allowing one visitor for patients in inpatient units and up to two visitors for patients in critical care units. CMH on Tuesday had 12 COVID patients in the hospital, which included two in the intensive care unit, Van Slyke said. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Andrea Mako reports in Porcupine Soup that Tannersville Village is the latest locality awarded a $10 million grant through the state's Downtown Revitalization Initiative. In the village for the announcement on November 28th, Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin said, and I quote, this $10 million in funding will allow Tannersville to continue its work towards becoming an affordable community that supports a four-season vacation and recreation industry. The residents of the Painted Village in the Sky now join the residents of many other downtowns that have benefited from this important program, end quote. 14 projects with a total cost of more than $66 million will get portions of the state funding. Sean Maloney, executive director of the Hunter Foundation, said Tannersville is the smallest community to ever be awarded the DRI funds. Some of the money will go to affordable and workforce housing, upgrades at the Orpheum Theater, a mountain bike center and adaptive trails, a community center, an expanded child care center, and a Catterskill Clove shuttle. Troy, Glens Falls, Hudson, Albany, and Schenectady have previously received the DRI funding. You can read more about this story at Porcupine Soup.
Tennessee Crow II is reporting for the Times Union that after sixth round of testing, a source for the PFOA-PFOS contamination surrounding the Algonquin Middle School in Poston Hill, Rensselaer County, has still not been determined, the county health department announced last week. Voluntary testing at 20 homes determined that none of them had results at or above the state permitted limit of 10 parts per trillion, according to the county. So far, the county has announced test results for 77 homes. Of these, 10 homes have reported results over 10 parts per trillion. Quote, we are obviously happy to see no new cases for PFOA in Postenkill, but recognize no source has been determined. We continue to work with the state to find the source or sources for the PFOA contamination and to get more answers, unquote. County Public Health Director Mary Fran Washina said. The county has been working with town officials, the State Department of Environmental Conservation, and the State Department of Health on the testing and investigation of the chemical pollution. The contamination became a concern after the Averill Park Central School District reported in January that water at the middle school exceeded the state level of 10 parts per trillion. The County Health Department, DEC, and the State Health Department will hold two public sessions on Wednesday, December 8th at the Algonquin Middle School to discuss the efforts underway to protect drinking water as well as the ongoing PFOA-PFAS investigation. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News reports about the latest candidate for governor in New York, Long Island Democratic Congressperson Tom Suozzi. He joins Governor Kathy Hochul, Attorney General Letitia James, and New York City public advocate Jemani Williams in the Democratic primary. Republicans also have five candidates to choose from. Long Island Congressperson Lee Zeldin, Andrew Giuliani, the son of former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, Lewis County Sheriff Mike Carpinelli, and contractor and podcast host Derek Gibson. Suozzi, 59, previously was mayor of the Long Island town of Glen Cove from 1994 to 2001, and then Nassau County Executive in 2002. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Patricia R. Doxey is reporting for the Daily Freeman that Central Hudson's efforts to upgrade its billing system have resulted in some customers being overbilled, underbilled, or not billed at all. In many cases, customers have not received a bill for several months. Others have had their accounts charged for massive electric usage, while still others say their accounts show no electric usage during the past several months. In some cases, Central Hudson customers enrolled in automatic payment plans have had unusually large and unexpected amounts withdrawn from their bank accounts. And many customers who have called Central Hudson for assistance with these issues have experienced extended hold times. The Poughkeepsie-based utility said it is aware of the billing problems and is working to get them resolved. Company spokesperson Joe Jenkins said some of the problems were anticipated as the company transitioned to a system better able to accommodate, quote, the billing complexities of the diverse supply chain, unquote. Unfortunately, the company did not anticipate the extent of the problems its customers would experience and was initially unable to handle the call volume, he said. Jenkins said the billing problems are, for the most part, impacting customers who have solar panels or who purchase their electricity through a community solar program. He said approximately 11,000 Central Hudson electricity customers, or about 3.5% of the total, are experiencing billing problems. James Den, a spokesperson for the State Department of Public Service, said the department is aware of the problems Central Hudson customers are experiencing and is monitoring the situation. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website. WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 41 degrees. There'll be a chance of snow showers mainly after 1 a.m. on Wednesday night. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 29. And on Thursday, rain and snow showers are likely becoming all rain after 8 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high of around 46 degrees. And Thursday night, a chance of showers before 1 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 33 degrees. And that
is your weather update from WGXE 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into all sorts of creative community voices on the radio Wednesday, December 1st, including at 10 a.m. we'll hear tracks from Bill Laswell on the Synth Eclectico show. Then Mayuka Fujina is live in the WGXC Acre studio with her show Your Voice Touches My String until noon, when we head to Catskill and live from Main Street in Catskill, where Spike Priggins, Spike's Record Rack store is. He's broadcasting there live until 2 p.m. when it's time for a Roadrunner rock and roll radio show. At 3 p.m. we hear about the four teenagers hosting a podcast and radio show in Seattle on the Radio Survivor program. 7 p.m. we head to Manhattan, where we simulcast the Off the Hook show from WBAI in New York with the crew from the 2600 Hacker Club on Off the Hook at 7 p.m. until 8 p.m. when we're live from Hudson with Rock and Roll High School with Peter McPartland and Anya Konevskaya on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXE.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
WGXC and Art Oh My welcome Phil Klein's Unsilent Night back to Ghent this year. WGXC will broadcast Phil Klein's Unsilent Night from Art Oh My in Ghent. The event is from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, December 4th. You can participate at Art Oh My. You're encouraged to bring a mobile phone, especially one with external speakers, or a boombox with a functioning tape deck. If you can't be there in person, you can tune in on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. That's Unsilent Night from Phil Klein at Art Oh My and on the radio at WGXC Saturday, December 4th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. WGXC and Art Oh My welcome Phil Klein's Unsilent Night back to Ghent this year. WGXC will broadcast Phil Klein's Unsilent Night from Art Oh My in Ghent. The event is from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. on Saturday, December 4th. You can participate at Art Oh My. You're encouraged to bring a mobile phone, especially one with external speakers, or a boombox with a functioning tape deck. If you can't be there in person, you can tune in on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. That's Unsilent Night from Phil Klein at Art Oh My and on the radio at WGXC Saturday, December 4th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, December 1st. Early this morning, we see that it is 29 degrees in Smithfield and 32 degrees in Hallahan Hill. Winds will be around 8 miles per hour today, making it feel chilly this afternoon. A high of 43 is expected at 1 p.m. Overnight, a low of 31 is expected at midnight. Shortly after, a warm front will bring a little bit of snow, which will fall before dawn, and then we will have a rainy day on Thursday with a high of 48 in the afternoon, and we will see some pretty strong wind gusts from place to place that will range from 20 to 40 miles per hour. Tarps will be flapping around and some branches will come down. Thursday night, rain ends by midnight. Friday is looking dry and windy with a high of 41. Saturday, some light rain or snow is expected, along with a high of also 41. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 6:17 a.m., high tide at 12:06 p.m., low tide again at 6:53 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 39 degrees. Sunset today will be at 4:12 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:01 a.m. Looking way up, we see a geomagnetic storm is possible on Friday from an incoming coronal mass ejection. Solar wind speed is currently 510 kilometers per second at 7.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently absolutely terrible. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 5, storm level. The current sunspot number is 61. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Neil Verma of Chicago, Illinois. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
KZMB, all zombie radio.
If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime, maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine. Got laid off down at the factory, and their timing's not the greatest in the world. Heaven knows I've been working hard, wanted Christmas to be right for Daddy's girl. I don't mean to hate December. It's meant to be the happy time of year. And my little girl don't understand why Daddy can't afford no Christmas here. If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime, maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello, this is Rob Gillis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month either in the near or distant past. On December 1st, 1918, Iceland was granted independence by the Danish Parliament. On December 3rd, 1962, Edith Sampson was sworn in as the first African-American female judge in the United States. On December 5th, 1782, Martin Van Buren, the 8th President of the United States, was born in Kinderhook, New York. He was the first president born a citizen of the United States. On December 7th, 1941, the U.S. naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, was attacked by nearly 200 Japanese aircraft, bringing the United States into World War II. On December 10, 1950, Dr. Ralph Bunche became the first African-American awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. On December 11, 1901, the first transatlantic radio signal was transmitted by Guglielmo Marconi from Cornwall, England to St. John's, Newfoundland. On December 14, 1911, Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen became the first person to reach the South Pole. On December 16, 1773, the Boston Tea Party occurred as colonial men disguised as Native Americans boarded British ships anchored in Boston Harbor and dumped 342 containers of tea into the water. On December 20, 1956, the Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott ended after the United States Supreme Court ruled that integrated the Montgomery bus system was implemented. On December 21, 1846, anesthesia was used for the first time in Britain during an operation at University College Hospital in London. On December 23, 1947, the transistor was invented at Bell Laboratories by John Bairdine, Walter Brattain, and William Shockley, who shared the Nobel Prize for their invention. On December 24, 1814, the Treaty of Ghent between America and England was signed, officially ending the War of 1812. On December 27, 1945, the International Monetary Fund was established in Washington, D.C. And on December 31, 1879, Thomas Edison provided the first public demonstration of his electric incandescent lamp at his laboratory in Menlo Park, New Jersey. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXE 90.7 FM. If you have an event that you'd like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgse.org.
Thank you. The $1.75 trillion Build Back Better Act will soon get a vote in the U.S. Senate. And in New York, advocates say it could mean major improvements to health coverage for lower-income adults and children. The Georgetown University Center for Children and Families says states would be required to provide 12 months of continuous eligibility for children enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program. Laura Castle of Medicaid Matters New York says Build Back Better also would increase postpartum coverage for new mothers from 60 days to 12 months.
We don't want someone to suddenly, 60 days after they've given birth, be without coverage. We know that transitioning from program to program is not always successful. It's not always affordable for someone. And so to have the economic security of Medicaid coverage is really critical.
New York is among 24 states that already offer continuous one-year eligibility for children in Medicaid and CHIP, but just over half do not. Supporters of the bill say they want it passed by Christmas, but with increasing inflation, detractors are concerned about the cost and could push for trimming its scope. Build Back Better would also permanently extend federal funding for CHIP, which provides coverage to 6.8 million children whose family income is still low but above the Medicaid eligibility level. Joan Alker with the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families says the bill would remove financial uncertainty for many families who depend on CHIP to insure their kids.
Hopefully this will provide an opportunity with stability in the CHIP program to allow states to try to get to the finish line here and get all kids covered.
The Children's Health Insurance Program currently has federal funding through 2027. Nearly 93% of eligible New York children are enrolled either in Medicaid or the state's CHIP program, Child Health Plus. I'm Emily Scott with New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Chocolate pigs are awesome.
I turned it down.
But only dogs can hear. Did you hear that?
No.
Hudson-based duo Buke and Gase have a 2021 collaboration with So Percussion coming out. And here's the first track, Diazepam, from Hudson's Buke and Gase.
Do find for my eyes.
and you,
and you,
and you,
and you,
and you,
and you,
and you, are listening,
are listening,
are listening,
are listening,
are listening,
are listening,
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 listening. You're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra, Catskills,
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 today.
East Durham,
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 Catskills,
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 Catskills.
The Hudson Area Library hosts a chestnut roast Saturday, December 4th at 2 p.m. at Oakdale Lake. There'll be an open fire on the Oakdale Beach in Hudson for the chestnut roast by the Hudson Area Library at 2 p.m. Saturday, December 4th, with Emerson Martin of Arthur's Point Farm giving a talk about chestnuts. Find out more about this and many other local community events on the WGXC community calendar, wgxc.org.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
And for our final segment today, we welcome back retired meteorologist Hugh Johnson. Hello.
Hello. Hello, Sina. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
We're joined by Kathy today. So, for me, the big weather event was we had our first snow last weekend. So how does the timeline compare with other years?
Actually, Sina, it was our latest first measurable snow event ever. Latest ever.
No way.
Yes. Beating out 1889 by one day. Now, it wasn't our first latest first inch. That still goes to 2015, when we had snow not till after Christmas, but it's our first measurable, latest measurable snow ever. So that's pretty interesting and cool by itself. But yeah, it was an interesting day that we had what we call an upslope snow event on Friday. If you lived in the valley, Hudson Valley, you got a dusting to maybe half an inch or so, maybe an inch in a few places. But if you went east, particularly to the Taconic Hills, the snow really racked up fast, up to a foot in some of the higher elevations, because you had this westerly flow slamming into the terrain, being forced upward, and there was a lot of moisture in that flow, and a couple of atmospheric things that just came together that really produced what we call a classic upslope snow situation. So we usually get about one or two of these a winter, so they're not that uncommon, but they're not that common either.
Yeah, I did notice driving around, there would be suddenly no snow and then suddenly quite a bit of snow. It felt very patchy, and you'd see these cars driving out with mounds of snow and you'd think they came from way up in the mountains. But so that's the upslope? Is that what you were saying?
Yep. You got it. Yep. And like I said, it happens about once or twice a winter and can really make a big difference over the area. I think everyone handled it, the upslope, pretty well. The forecast was going for better parts of a half foot in the higher terrain. So I think it was well forecasted, but it made for a white Friday instead of a black Friday.
I'm so surprised at the statistic. That is a fun fact I was not expecting. Kathy.
So, yeah. I wonder, Hugh, it's nice to meet you. I wonder if you
Kathy.
Us, what were the November Capital District weather highlights? What stood out for you? And, you know, if you need to go into history to talk about historical November weather highlights, if this weather was particularly dull this past month, you can feel free.
Yeah, I would say it was a little duller than normal. The upslope snow is probably the most exciting thing. We had a couple of rain events early. Actually, we did have that thunderstorm back. I was in Philly. That happened. It was a pretty strong thunderstorm complex, even with temperatures in the 40s. And that kind of grabbed your attention, because most people think of thunderstorms when it's warm and muggy, and it was in the 40s. Very dynamical system that produced that. So that was kind of exciting. Otherwise, it was a pretty drab month. Temperatures falling a little short of normal, especially here at the end. And up till the end, it looked like it was, I mean, we don't measure sunshine anymore, which I really don't agree with, but it seemed to me and others that we had a fairly sunny for November going in until this last week, and then it all kind of caved in. We had a lot of clouds and 4 or 5 days of flurries in a row, including the Black Friday thing. But you know, so, but basically it wasn't a super atypical November, but there was the interesting thunderstorm event the first Saturday of the month, or was it the second, but it was the second Saturday. It was in mid-November, and then the upslope event last week.
You mentioned measuring sunlight. Why have we stopped measuring sunlight? What is the purpose of measuring sunlight? Could you tell us a little more about that?
I need to ask one more question about that. Sorry. Who is in charge of deciding whether we measure sunlight or not? And if we among ourselves decided that sunlight should be measured, could armchair meteorologists undertake to measure sunlight on their own?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's no one telling you can't do that. Of course, to make it official is a whole different ballgame. But, you know, it's the powers to be in the Weather Service. I think it was just one of those things that felt that it was not necessary to spend money on. And, I mean, we still do cloud cover. Okay, so we do measure the cloud cover through ASOTS, the instrument that helps actually observes the weather for us. Of course, humans still augment it. It's not totally automated, but it was just felt that that wasn't necessary, which I disagree with. I think there should be some thing for sunshine, especially now where people are relying on solar panels and things, although they're getting more efficient, so we don't need as much sun or as strong a sun as we did 10 or 20 years ago. But, yeah, it's a disappointment. They stopped doing it about 15 years ago, something like that. And but, you know, again, subjectively, I thought we had Wednesday before Thanksgiving had a really blue, sunny day. It was one of the – might have been the bluest day we had this year. It just seemed like it was just a brilliant sunny day with just a few clouds late in the day. But ever since then, it's been cloudy.
So we talk often about climate change. How is for solar panels? Are the conditions improving?
Well, I think the technology is definitely improving. As far as the climate itself, I think we're getting a few more clouds because, again, warmer atmosphere yields more moisture, and more moisture can yield more clouds, especially in the winter. And I think that's a lot of the reason why this time of year through the winter, where temperatures are not as cold, because I think we're cloudier. I remember January where it was a lot colder and clear, and I don't think we're getting that as much. I think we're getting more clouds in the winter for sure. And, of course, this year we had an unusually cloudy July. I think no one will argue that. A lot of clouds and somewhat rainy days, just kind of kind of depressing overall. So a lot more clouds, perhaps. That could be a signal of climate change.
So we're getting more clouds, yet I feel like I've been learning more about the lack of rain and the technological advancements to try to get clouds to rain. So we're getting more clouds, but they're not raining? Or, I mean specifically regions, like I think certain parts of Australia and California. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think California might be a little different. They might not be getting less clouds there, but I think we're getting more clouds and precipitation here. It's not, they're definitely going hand in hand. Now, we get days like today where it looks thick and cloudy, and we did get a few flurries, but there wasn't much precipitation. That's typical in November. But all in all, I'd say, you know, basically, to look at our stats, we've inched up on precipitation and cloud cover, although cloud cover maybe not quite as much of a smoking gun, but, you know, precipitation absolutely is. Our winter statistics came out. We're running a good inch or two higher with precipitation throughout the winter than we used to, absolutely.
So, Hugh, we just have about a minute left. Mm-hmm. Are there any other silver linings to all these new clouds?
Well, it's going to prevent us from having super cold nights in the winter. I mean, maybe that's a good thing. You won't be calling your AAA people to come start your car. We don't get down to 20 below zero like we used to. We haven't been below 20 below zero since 1994, believe it or not. That used to be fairly common in the capital region. You go back to the 70s, 60s, and even 80s, you'll see a lot of nights that we hit 20 below or you know, frequently in January and February. We're seeing that rare almost never now. Like I said, it's been a long time since it happened, so I guess that's a silver lining. We are getting less brutally cold nights, so I guess we'll take that as a positive.
And we're out of time, but can you give us a really quick forecast of the coming week?
unsettled, but not no big storms, no big snowstorms, just a lot of little disturbances coming through, temperatures staying out or a little bit below normal. Thursday's the one day we get a bump in temperatures in the 40s, so enjoy because the rest of the week looks pretty cold.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Hugh Johnson, for joining us. If any listeners have climate questions, please email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. We will ask Hugh Johnson to answer them for us, and you might hear your question on the show.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
First, let me assure everyone the government will not default, as it never has. And second, Majority Leader and I have been having discussions about the way forward.
Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell on raising the debt limit and avoiding a government shutdown. He and former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin discussed the nation's borrowing limit in a meeting on Tuesday as an impasse over the debt limit drags on. Congress has until December 15th to act. A gunman opened fire at a Michigan high school on Tuesday, killing 3 students and wounding 8 other people, including at least 1 teacher. Law enforcement arrested a 15-year-old sophomore within minutes of arriving at the school in Oxford Township. President Joe Biden has signed 4 bills related to benefits for veterans. The bills address disparities, continuation of service and tuition for survivors, as well as a proposal to help mothers who have served.
We've heard from veterans of color who, upon returning home from their service, are treated differently from white veterans. This bill will help us understand how this happened, keep better records, expose the facts of the light of day.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell acknowledged Tuesday that he now expects high inflation to continue into the middle of 2022. He said the government should no longer push what had been a reoccurring slogan of higher prices being transitory.
It's difficult to predict the persistence and effects of supply constraints, but it now appears that factors pushing inflation upward will linger.
Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar held a news conference on Tuesday addressing recent anti-Muslim comments made by Colorado Congresswoman Lauren Boebert that suggested Omar was a terrorist. Omar is one of 3 Muslim representatives in Congress.
It is not just an attack on me, but on millions of American Muslims across this country.
Consumer advocates testified Tuesday before a Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Product Safety over the holiday season. Consumer watchdog associate at U.S. PIRG Hannah Rhodes on how online retailers can prevent the sale of counterfeit items and product recalls.
For hosting sites, they should make sure that they are reviewing for recalling products. But for recalling companies, there needs to be more accountability in the system.
A panel of experts advising the FDA has voted in favor of emergency use authorization of an antiviral pill from Merck and Ridgeback Biotherapeutics to treat COVID-19. If the agency authorizes use of the drug, it would be the first oral antiviral treatment for the coronavirus that could be taken at home. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
We'll be right back.
That was a dub remix by Armonica and Mo Black of Fela's song International Thief Thief, released in 2020.